All right, I think we're ready. Thank you, sir.
Good morning, Your Honors. Peter Sloss, along with Robert Murphy, representing the appellant in this case, Rickmers Genoa Schiffarts Gesellschaft. This is a case involving injury to a Filipino seaman who was employed by Rickmers on a foreign flag vessel pursuant to an employment contract that is promulgated by the Philippine government and that all Filipino seamen have to sign and that governs the terms of employment of all Filipino seamen. And the contract requires that disputes be resolved through arbitration in the Philippines under Philippine law. Now, the plaintiff in this case ultimately was compelled to arbitrate his claims in the Philippines, and the arbitrators, in fact, applied Philippine law and awarded plaintiff the benefits to which he proved he was entitled under Philippine law. And the plaintiff then came back to the Louisiana courts and urged the courts here to set the award aside or to refuse to enforce the award on the grounds that the arbitrators had violated U.S. public policy by applying Philippine law to his claims and by not giving him the protections and benefits of U.S. law. And the district court, the court below, agreed with the plaintiff's argument in a somewhat roundabout way. The court held that U.S. law was not applicable per se, but that Marshall Islands law was applicable and that Marshall Islands law adopted the non-statutory remedies of U.S. general maritime law. And the court said because the arbitrators did not give this Filipino seaman the benefits and protections of U.S. general maritime law, the award violated U.S. public policy. So the issue for this court is distilled down to the question, was the Philippine arbitrator's application of Philippine law to this Filipino seaman a violation of U.S. public policy? And if you look at the standards of what determines a public policy violation under the Convention on the Recognition and Enforcement of Foreign Arbitral Awards, which this award is covered by, what this court has said is in order to establish a public policy violation, the plaintiff has to prove that enforcement of the award would violate our most basic notions of morality and justice. So the question here really becomes, did the Philippine arbitrator's application of Philippine law to a Filipino seaman's claims violate this country's most basic notions of morality and justice? And to refine it even further, did the Philippine arbitrator's application of Philippine law instead of Marshall Islands law to this Filipino seaman's claims violate U.S. public policy? Did it violate our most basic notions of morality and justice? We believe that there is no reasonable way that you can answer that question by saying that application of Philippine law to a Filipino seaman violates our most basic notions of morality and justice. Now, I want to point out a few things about the contract. Again, this is a Philippine government contract. It's a standard contract that all Filipino seamen are subject to. And it's a very comprehensive contract. There are a number of copies in the record, but I think it's important to recognize that it contains a large number of different provisions, all governing the employment of Filipino seamen. Now, it's a trade-off, like any contract. It's a trade-off, it's a bargain, it's a quid pro quo. So some of the provisions may be perceived as being somewhat more favorable to the employer. But those provisions are balanced out by aspects of the contract that are beneficial to the seamen. So it's a trade-off. So while the plaintiff in this case wants you to focus on the arbitration clause, the choice of law clause, the compensation schedule, which are in the contract, and while the plaintiff wants you to conclude that those provisions are unfair to the seaman, it's important to recognize that those are just three of the many, many, many terms that govern this man's employment. And many of those terms were favorable to the plaintiff. So we suggest you can't just look at these contractual terms in isolation. You have to consider the contract as a whole and the trade-off it creates.
What's the trade-off for virtually no damages for permanent injury?
Well, no, that's it. First of all, let me point out that what the evidence showed and what the arbitrators found was that this man had the lowest compensable disability rating that he could get under Philippine law. So what the arbitrators found, and there's no evidence in the record to contradict this, was that plaintiff is only minimally disabled from future employment.
A level 13 injury, right? 35% burns.
It's a level 14, it was a 14, grade 14, correct.
35% burns on his body?
Correct. He had second degree burns on 35% of his body. But what?
Dysfunctional apparently permanently?
No, that is not correct. There is absolutely no evidence in the record to support that. Nothing at all. There is no evidence in the record to support the conclusion that this man has a significant disability from future employment. Now, the Philippine system is like most other workers' compensation systems, including the workers' compensation systems applied throughout the United States. There is no compensation for pain and suffering. The compensation is based entirely on the level of disability. And what the evidence in the record, and the evidence in the record of the as to what happened in the arbitration is very scant. All we have really is the award itself, and I would point out that it is the plaintiff's burden of proof to overcome enforcement of the award, and it's a heavy burden. So the absence of evidence in the record in this case works against the plaintiff. But what we know from the award itself is that the plaintiff had burn injuries, received excellent medical treatment, and about 4 months after the injury, he was discharged from medical care with a disability rating of 14, the lowest compensable disability rating. It's important to note that under the contract, and this is in the record, section 20B3 of the contract, plaintiff could have offered medical evidence controverting the assessment of a grade 14 disability. He did not. There is no evidence in the record that plaintiff challenged in any way the assessment of a grade 14 disability. Now again, this is a no-fault compensation system, fixed benefits based entirely on the level of disability. It's the same thing that I would be subject to and that most employees in the United States would be subject to. If I sustained 35% burns, but after 4 months, I was capable of returning to my occupation. I was not disabled from working. I would not get benefits simply because of the burn injuries. I want to also point out that under the contract, plaintiff received full medical treatment at Rickmer's expense and 4 months of basic wages. So he received what is effectively the equivalent of maintenance and cure under U.S. law, under Philippine law. So you can't just view the disability award in isolation. You have to consider all of the benefits that the plaintiff received, including the medical expenses and the wages he received. I would also point out that the district court did not find that the award violated public policy because of the amount of the award. And in fact, the plaintiff conceded in his brief that the amount of the award was not a basis for voiding the award or refusing to enforce it on public policy grounds. What the district court found was that the refusal to provide this seaman, this foreign seaman, the benefits and protections of U.S. general maritime law violated U.S. public policy. We submit that there is absolutely no legal support for that finding. First of all, I want to emphasize, and I know you all have you have been involved in arbitration cases, and you are aware of the policy favoring arbitration and the very narrow limits on review, judicial review of an arbitral award. In fact, this court has said that It views the award with exceeding deference to the arbitrator's findings. This court has also said that the bases for review of an arbitral award are extraordinarily narrow. Now, again, if what this court has pointed out and said is if there's any rational basis for the arbitrator's award, the award must be enforced. And what this court has said, considering a public policy defense under the convention, is unless enforcement of the award would violate our most basic notions of morality and justice, the award must be enforced. So the questions that the district court was authorized to ask in this case was there any rational basis for these Philippine arbitrators to apply Philippine law to this Filipino seaman? And was the arbitrator's application of Philippine law to this Filipino seaman, did that violate our most basic notions of morality and justice? Well, the district court didn't ask those questions. What the district court did was perform his own choice of law analysis under U.S. law. And he determined that Marshall Islands law should apply. He believed, although the record is scant, on this point, that Marshall Islands law adopted the non-statutory remedies of U.S. general maritime law. And from that, he concluded that the failure to apply the remedies of maritime law violated U.S. public policy. But that's not the question he was authorized to ask. So
Does Marshall Islands have any law on whether its law when its flag governs the ship should preempt or...
There's absolutely nothing in the record to indicate how Marshall Islands law would resolve the choice of law issue. What we do know is that under Philippine law controlled this man's claims. That was the arbitrator's finding. It was a reasoned decision. They cited Philippine law to say that they were applying and had to apply Philippine law to this man's claims. We don't know what Marshall Islands law would apply because there's no record on that issue. There's no record as to what Marshall Islands law would say about the choice of law clause in the plaintiff's employment contract. There's no record as to what Marshall Islands law would provide in terms of enforcing the Philippine arbitrator's decision to apply Philippine law to this man's claim. So there's no record on this. And again, it's the plaintiff's burden to prove that the award violates public policy, and it's a heavy burden. So the absence of record evidence to establish those points is, in the end, something that the plaintiff has failed to carry his burden of proof on. I can see my time is running short, and there's a lot of issues in this. Obviously, we briefed this extensively. We rely heavily on the arguments in our brief, and certainly we want you to consider those. What I would point out in my limited time here is that the district court's conclusion that the failure to apply U.S. general maritime remedies to this man's claims is contrary to 60 years of jurisprudence from the Supreme Court, from this court, and other courts, starting with the Supreme Court's decision in Lauritzen v. Larson, in which the court held that it was perfectly okay to apply foreign law to a foreign seaman's claims, and that the denial of the benefits and protections of U.S. law did not violate either U.S. law or U.S. policy. Since Lauritzen, this court, on at least 20 occasions, has denied foreign seamen the benefits and protections of U.S. general maritime law. So in order for the district court's conclusion in this case to be correct, you would have to find that the Supreme Court, this court, and numerous other courts have repeatedly violated U.S. public policy by denying foreign seamen the benefits and protections of U.S. general maritime law for the past 60 years. We don't believe you can possibly reach that conclusion. To the contrary, we think you have to conclude that Lauritzen and the numerous cases that have followed it over the past 60 years establish that U.S. public policy is in no way offended by the application of foreign law to foreign seamen and the corresponding denial of the benefits and protections of U.S. general maritime law, and that the district court's conclusion to the contrary is simply legally wrong. I see my initial time is up. I will.
You've reserved your rebuttal time. Thank you, sir. All right, Mr. Dodson.
Your Honor, I'm Richard Dodson, my co-counsel, law partner Mike Colomb, here on behalf of Mr. Assignation. First, one thing Mr. Sloss is right about. A foreign seaman does not have a guaranteed right to the application of United States law. Very simple. But what he does have, like any other litigant, is an absolute right to a fair and impartial choice of law analysis. And if American law doesn't apply, those cases are frequently set away by forum non-convenes or forum selection clause.
Well, if he's got an arbitration clause, he doesn't have that absolute right. He has the right to have the arbitrator.
Correct, Your Honor. We did arbitrate.
He doesn't have an absolute right to get a de novo review of the choice of law, does he?
Well, in this case, yes, Your Honor, because the Philippine arbitrator refused to make a choice of law determination.
Well, he did make a choice of law. He looked at it. He said, we affirmatively reject applying Marshall Islands law. We're going to apply Filipino law based on Filipino law.
Because the exact words, we're precluded from considering Marshall Island or United States law because of Section 31 of the contract that says Philippine law shall apply. And so they were precluded from considering.
Okay, maybe they're wrong about it, but that doesn't mean you get a de novo review, do you?
Well, Your Honor, we have to determine first what rights this seafarer had to see if the Mitsubishi Sky Reefer Doctrine or prospective waiver was applicable. In other words, could he effectively vindicate his rights before this arbitral body? To make that determination, we must first decide what those rights are, and that's what the district judge did.
Can we look at Marshall Island law to determine that?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The Marshall Island law adopts the general maritime law of the United States. That is, beyond doubt. This ship owner chose to apply the Marshall Island law.
Well, does Marshall Island have a public policy in saying every seaman, regardless of where they are from and what flag they're flying under, is entitled to U.S. maritime law?
That's what their law says, Your Honor. In fact, on page 22 of our brief, we pointed out the section of the...
Regardless of what flag they're flying.
Oh, no, only for the Marshall Island flag. If this ship owner chose the Marshall Island flag, now this is a flag of convenience. The ship owner gets to choose where he's going to register his ship, and then he gets the protections and benefits of those laws. For example, in the Marshall Islands, you don't pay any income tax. You get to hire foreign seamen at low wages. You don't, just like you fly the American flag, you got to hire American seamen. Fly the German flag, you get expensive Germans. So let's choose the Marshall Islands. No taxes. Let's see, we had Romanians, we had Russians, we had Chinese, we had Filipinos on this ship. And so the logical choice would be the law of the flag on this vessel has some law.
Let's back up. It seems to me the United States would have to have a policy that we don't care what flag you fly under. The United States maritime laws apply to foreign seamen. That's for us to say, well, we don't care what your arbitration agreement said. Our public policy is seamen, no matter where they come from, get these maritime rights.
No, Your Honor, we don't say that. We don't say that seamen, wherever you come from, get U.S. rights. You have to make a choice of law determination. We finished a case a year and a half ago in Judge Ball.
Even if the choice of law determination is wrong, it doesn't violate our public policy unless our public policy is so strong that you must have U.S. rights. Do you see my point?
I really don't, because I don't think a seaman has an absolute right to U.S. rights. What he has an absolute right to is a choice of law determination. I've tried cases in this state where we've applied Russian law. We tried one in federal court recently where we applied the law of the United Kingdom. You make a choice of law determination, and then that governs the rules.
You're saying, yes, we do review the arbitrator's choice of law provision de novo. We give it no deference whatsoever.
The arbitrators did not make a choice of law decision. They said, we got to apply Philippine law. We can't consider anything else. In fact, they wanted to say, we've never found a case where under this contract where anything was ever applied but Philippine law. And then the maximum benefit under that contract is $60,000. It is a workman's compensation system tilted very much in favor of the ship owners. They amended that contract in the year 2000 to make the contractual payment cover not only the contract but tort. And the arbitrators mentioned in their decision that the reason they did that is that the Filipinos were perceived as, quote, whining too much, and ship owners wouldn't hire Filipinos unless we included tort damages and contract damages. and lessen the rights of the seafarers. They specifically noted that. What we're saying is this, and it's what Judge Zaney said. If they had made a choice of law determination and said, well, this seafarer has these rights, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to apply the facts to these rights. But he didn't have any rights. He had zero rights. He had no rights for maintenance and cure. He had no rights to negligence. He had no rights for insurance. He had no rights on the Philippines.
He had no rights to medical care?
None whatsoever. Once you get that determination with the doctor, you are cut off. I filed recently the decision of Judge Blake of the District of Maryland in the Aguero decision. That was a Filipino seaman who said, I'm not going home. I will die if I go home, because once they render my percentage of disability, you don't get any future medical care. And contrary to what counsel says, Mr. Assignation is severely disabled. We brought him over here while the case was still in the district court for him to be deposed by opposing counsel and to have a medical examination. And the findings in Judge Zaney's opinion are directly from Dr. Henderson's report. This man needs surgery right now. He needs hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical attention. He is not in good shape. He is totally and permanently disabled. Now, they're right. There's a very narrow and limited review, but I respectfully submit we fit within this exception. The public policy says the effective vindication of your rights. You got to know what those rights are. He had no rights, no remedies whatsoever under the Philippines. So the court conducted a choice of law analysis under the Lauritzen-Roditis test and came up saying, well, the law of the flag, the Supreme Court says, is of cardinal importance, so we'll apply the law of the Marshall Islands, which is adopted the general maritime law of the United States. And that is a logical conclusion. That is exactly what Judge Blake did in the District of Maryland in the Aguero case, where she refused to enforce the Philippine Arbitral Award. This seafarer, who's had $900,000 of pending expenses, was granted $89,000 by the arbitral body. That was the maximum under the collective agreement. If you don't have a collective agreement, the maximum you get is $60,000. So it was better for that seafarer to stay here and let us taxpayers pay for his medical help than go back to the Philippines, where he would have died. Just that simple. Now, Lito Assignation went home. He had a wife and children, but he's not getting any medical care there, none whatsoever. This case.
Let's come back to the contract. I mean, the arbitral panel construed the employment contract as an agreement, albeit perhaps an adhesion one, but an agreement to determine any dispute arising out of employment under Philippine law. I mean, that's what the arbitral panel did. So you're right, they felt precluded, but preclusion was based on construing the contract. So where are we on the contract that's signed requiring the application of Philippines law?
Well, as a matter of contract, I think, well, that's probably correct. But what I submit they're supposed to do is make a choice of law determination using their choice of law factors set forth, and they have them, they're in Tetley's book here, on what law should apply. But they said we're precluded from considering this.
Well, because if the contract says that Philippine law applies, what's the choice of law determination?
Well, you would look at the factors under Philippine law. They didn't even tell us what they are. But what the Philippines is trying to do is export their laws to the detriment of the United States.
I'm not trying to get there, and I understand those arguments. I'm just trying to understand where we are. We're back at the arbitral panel, and the panel, looking at this agreement, the employment contract, it says Philippine law will apply. Okay, I'm stuck on where the choice of law determination comes in if the document is saying Philippine law applies. So when is it you say the arbitral panel should have conducted a choice of a law analysis?
We said, the Philippine lawyer for Mr. Assignation said, the law of the Marshall Islands or the law of the United States should apply because the accident happened here, the ship owner chose the law of the Marshall Islands.
Absent an employment contract, I follow that argument.
That's
I'm
right.
Saying, what's the Philippine lawyer's argument in the face of words in the contract which say Philippine law applies?
To get the job, you got to sign the contract. Everyone who leaves the Philippines has got to sign that contract. If not, you can't get an exit visa and you can't leave the country. So he had to sign the contract to get the job. Now, I cited the Judge Marsh, District of Oregon, and the Jose v. Fir Grove case where he talks about the POEA and employment conditions. This is, it's not like here. I mean,
you're saying it's a contract of adhesion and we should set it aside and not, it's a matter of public policy, we ignore it.
No, Your Honor, I think we look at the arbitral award and see if it complies with our public policy, and the arbitral award in this case does not, because they did not consider his rights and remedies under the applicable law, because they didn't determine the applicable law. They said, we have a contract. Like you say, Judge, we got a contract, we got to apply Philippine law, and you got a grade 14 disability, by the way, from the company doctor. From the company doctor, they always give the lowest possible ratings. I mean, you know, it's just, it's an unfair system. But
well, I mean, I fully understand, we both understand the argument you're making up here in terms of, you know, unfairness, it's inequitable. I mean, obviously the ship owner draws up the contract heavily to wait. I mean, we get that, and we're not poising any opinion in terms of who ought to do what. We're just simply looking at what we got. And so, as here, if the argument is that he, the employee, signed an adhesion contract, then I haven't found or don't follow that somebody made an argument. Yes, he signed a contract, but the contract is contrary to public policy because A, B, C, D, and E. That doesn't seem to me to be an argument that's made. I'm not sure if it's viable, but that's kind of what bleeding in here is to say implicitly Judge Zaney found that the contract he signed was a violation of public policy, to wit, therefore the general maritime law, the law of the Marshall Islands, which adverts to the law of the U.S., ought to be applicable. So, I mean, the question is, the starting point still seems to be this contract, whether adhesion or not, and we get lots of situations.
Well, Your Honor, I would reply that in the Rhoditis v. Hellenic Lions case, the United States Supreme Court considered the case of a Greek seaman injured on a Greek flag vessel was owned by a Greek corporation whose employment contract called for resolution of his case in Piraeus, Greece under Greek law. The United States Supreme Court ignored the contract entirely and said it would be unfair to give the Jones Act a constrained interpretation to give this alien owner an unfair competitive advantage over American ship owners. So they ignored the contract, even though it was a Greek seaman, called for a Greek forum under Greek law with a Greek corporation. Why? Because in that case, the Hellenic Hero, the vessel, was not a, quote, casual visitor. It had a base of operations in New York and earned considerable income in competition with American ship owners. The same is true here. The Rickmans Daily, the accident happened here on the 7th Street Wharf in the Port of New Orleans in direct competition with American ship owners. If we're going to allow third world countries to put in provisions to give them the advantage to where it's better to flag out for an American owner to go flag out in the Marshall Islands or Liberia or Vanuatu and hire cheap foreign labor than hire Americans, well, you know, there's no way that we can compete. It's what it gets down to. That was part of the reason from 1915 forward with the LaFollette Act, the Seamen's Act, for what the Supreme Court said in Hellenic Lions v. Rhoditis, Americans must have a way to compete. And so this contract, Judge, the courts ignore them. I mean, just like the Supreme Court did in the
Why don't we have any more cases than we do?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Why don't we have any more cases than we already? This is the second case that I know about. Why aren't there more?
Well, we panel a lot of them, Your Honor. We normally do them in state court under the Savings to Suitors Clause. We now have them in federal court because since the year 2000 with the Francisco v. Stowe Lyons case, the court has said, well, this Philippine case calls for arbitration, and so we get removed under the convention to federal court, and then we have to battle out, well, is there an arbitration agreement? And then we get to this stage, well, we're now in the award enforcement stage. And they're not a lot. They're expensive cases to bring. You got to have someone who's catastrophically injured to do it. And again, this case and Aguero are the only two cases in which a district court has refused to enforce the arbitral award under the public policy exception.
All the other district courts are enforcing the arbitral awards. Is that what you're telling us?
No, Your Honor. Normally, what we try and do initially is get the case remanded to state court in the arbitration agreement enforcement stage before we have to go arbitrate. That's our first line of defense as such as, look, we don't want to play in federal court. Let's go back to state court. That's what we do first. I have one pending in the Middle District right now, Filipino Seaman. We say there's no arbitration agreement, so we don't have to arbitrate because that POA contract was amended for a judicial forum. So this is procedural foreplay. These cases are normally decided. These are normally pretty clear liability cases.
And the state courts don't make them arbitrate?
No, Your Honor. In this case, it's the state court did.
No, I'm talking about the mine run of cases. You say you want to play in state court. Those are your words.
That's correct.
Do they go to arbitration in the Philippines or not?
This case is the first one that any state judge has ever required a seaman of any nationality to arbitrate that I know of.
And they don't enforce the arbitration agreements because why?
Because of 23921A of the Louisiana statutes, it says no choice of law or choice of form clause shall be enforced unless ratified by the seaman after the incident giving rise to the litigation. So as a matter of public policy, choice of law and choice of form clauses are not enforceable in state court, period. That's why. But again, we have state procedure, and when we're in your court, Your Honor, we have federal procedure. The rules are entirely different. So, you know, choice of form is outcome determinative, clearly. And so they know the rules very well. We do this a lot of seamen of all nationalities. But again, we follow the rules here. We arbitrated, and we say the award is in violation of public policy because they would not consider what the seafarer's rights were under the applicable law. Because they said, we're precluded from doing that. And they said, look, the applicable law is this, and here's what he's going to get. But they didn't do that. And they said he has no remedies. He has no rights to future maintenance, no future medical, no future loss of wages. For less than 1 month's salary, his life is over, unless we get to go try this case back in Judge Zaney's court. And the same for Mr. Aguero from the District of Maryland. They're appealing that to the Fourth Circuit. I mean, we're on parallel courses here. We're going to find out what the public policy is when it comes to Filipino seamen. Judge Blake says the POA contract violates U.S. public policy, and that's essentially what Judge Zaney said. In other words, if you've got to make a choice of law determination somewhere to see what those rights are, to see if there's been an effective vindication of those. And if you don't know what they are, you can't consider that. That's why Judge Blake said Liberian law applies to that case. Judge Zaney says Marshall Island law applies to this case. Both countries adopted the general maritime law of the United States. I hope I've answered your questions. I'm trying to be.
I think we got it. I mean, you know, it's briefed and out there. I mean, we understand.
We have the largest port in the world sitting right out here. We have over 6,000 vessels a year that come in. You have 150,000 foreign seamen in our river at all times. The Supreme Court says the law of the flag is of cardinal importance. Now, this German owner chose the general maritime law of the United States. They chose our law. And so, therefore, they ought to be held to that. They shouldn't be able to escape their obligations by saying, well, we're going to go hire this guy.
What is American policy about? Let's suppose it were a German flag or a Russian flag or a Chinese flag. Would we still say no, U.S. law applies?
No. If it was a German flag vessel.
What is the United States public policy in saying we don't care what flag you're under, but we're going to apply your flag country, period?
If this had been a German flag vessel owned by a German company with a German crew, we would not be here. The German seamen who had been burned would be litigating this case in Germany.
That's just happenstance. What's the U.S. policy? The U.S. policy on looking to the flag of the ship, no matter what?
The first thing the court does, whether you're in state court or federal court, normally.
And what if the flag country is the Philippines? And we say the flag country applies, you're out of luck. I'm trying to get at the core public policy. Would we say we don't care that it's the flagship, that he should get more rights here because it happened in New Orleans?
Basically, the court looks at the seven factors in Lauritzen and one factor.
You're ignoring my question.
No, I don't mean to.
What if the flag country provides very few remedies to their seamen? What is the U.S. core underlying policy by saying, well, we don't care. He needs more remedies.
The court considers the flag of the vessel as one of the eight factors. The Supreme Court has enunciated in Lauritzen and Roditis to determine what law applies. So the flag is considered, but it's only one of eight factors in that consideration. Seven are listed in Roditis, one in.
Well, all the facts were the same in this case, except that instead of a Marshall Island flagship, it was some other country's flagship that provided very little benefits to their seamen. Now, where are we in
terms of the
core policy of the United States?
If those rights from that country's flag, Timbuktu, say, were such that he could effectively vindicate those rights, well, so be it. The warrant should be enforced.
They say he's limited to $150,000.
Well, the quantum is only important on the extent of the injury. For Mr. Aguero, who has nearly $1 million in future medical, I think we'd have to look at that. But the quantum is just one of the considerations. But you have to look at what the rights
so
are.
You're saying a core principle of the United States law is we're going to enforce our own conflict of laws in a way to make sure everybody gets a remedy. That's basically what you're saying.
When you're in American court, we're going to use American standards to make that determination, just like the Philippines should have used their standards to make the determination of what law was applicable. They didn't do that. They said, you know, we're precluded from doing
that. I'm just trying to get at in the terms of the convention, in terms of the treaty,
mm-hmm.
what core values of the United States here are put at issue, and it seems to me you must be saying that regardless of the flagship, regardless of that, the United States has a core underlying policy that people are going to be compensated in a reasonable way. And we do that through our choice of law provisions, and that is so core that it's going to violate our nation's most basic notions of morality and justice unless seamen are adequately compensated under the law applicable to them.
I think that is fair to say under the law applicable to them because the court has got to make that determination of what law is applicable.
But what I'm saying, if our choice of law principles lead to a country's laws that don't compensate him very much, are we going to ignore that?
No, we don't. We don't, Your Honor. These courts never have. In the Kareem v. Finch case cited in, I believe, their brief, it was a Bangladesh seaman, and Judge Fallon applied Bangladesh law, and he didn't get anywhere near what he would have got under American law. We tried a case, and Mr. Clome and I did, in Judge Barbee's court, and applied the law of the United Kingdom, and it settled the third day, but again, under United Kingdom standards.
So now you're saying the core principle is that we make sure that arbitrations around the world, that whatever they do, they must apply correctly choice of law principles. And if they don't, that's a violation of our country's most basic notions of morality and justice.
Yes, Your Honor, they must determine what rights a seafarer has.
And if they make that, if they pick that differently than our courts would,
I think that's
even
right.
If Bangladesh law applies.
I think that's right, Your Honor. I agree with you. I mean, but they didn't do that here. They said we're precluded from that.
I'm not talking about what happened here.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm trying to get at the underlying overarching.
The world is not a fair place when it comes to foreign seamen. I mean, that's what it gets down to. If you're a Bangladesh seaman, it's tough. If you're an Indian seaman, it's tough. But again, you know, we're very lucky to have been born in the United States of America and have the rights that we have.
No doubt.
No doubt about it at all. And I appreciate it more and more every day.
I think that's a good place to round you out there.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate your questions.
I think we have your argument. All right, rebuttal, Mr. Stoss.
Thank you, Your Honors. A lot to address. Let me address Judge Owen's most recent question. There is absolutely no authority to support the public policy that seamen from around the world, no matter where they agree to resolve their claims or how or by whom, have to have a certain amount of compensation. There's no way that such a policy could be properly enforced. I mean, every judge would have his or her own idea as to what would be sufficient compensation in any given case. The policy favoring arbitration and constraining judicial review of arbitral awards would basically be meaningless. It would be up to the whims of every judge to handle a case. What our policy is, and it's very clearly articulated in a number of cases from the Supreme Court and this court, is that U.S. courts must respect foreign law and must respect the remedies provided under foreign law, even if they're not as generous as U.S. law. That is the Supreme Court's decision in Bremen versus Zapata Offshore, Shirk versus Alberto Culver, and this court's decision.
The Supreme Court has also said, for example, if you have rights under the American antitrust laws. It doesn't matter if you arbitrate in Japan. The Japanese arbitrators have to at least consider those claims.
That's correct. I'm sorry. Go ahead. The Supreme Court has said that about U.S. antitrust law. It's in dicta.
The way you do that is when they seek to enforce the award.
The Supreme Court has said that about statutory remedies under the U.S. antitrust laws. That's all they've said it about. It was dicta. This court has specifically pointed out, and the Supreme Court has pointed out, that it was dicta. This court has specifically said they don't see any basis to extend that dictum beyond the antitrust context. This case, and every articulation of the so-called prospective waiver doctrine speaks only of U.S. statutory remedies. And even with that, there's no consensus that there is such a doctrine. This case does not involve any U.S. statutory remedies. Even the district court found that Marshall Islands law would apply, not U.S. law, and that the only implication of U.S. law through Marshall Islands law was of non-statutory remedies. So the district court's suggestion that this prospective waiver doctrine, such as it is, would prevent enforcement of this award goes beyond even the most expansive articulation that anyone has given that doctrine. And let me say also that by giving it such an expansive formulation, the court specifically violated this court's directive that public policy defenses to enforcement of an award under the convention must be narrowly construed.
Counsel indicated that the contract does not require maintenance secure up through the, is that?
That is absolutely wrong. Read section 20 of the contract. It specifically says he's entitled to medical expenses until he reaches the point where his disability is established. He's entitled to basic wages until his disability is established.
And what if his disability is permanent?
If he has a permanent disability, then he gets an additional award, no fault remedy, for compensation, disability compensation, based on the level of his disability, which again, in this case, was a grade 14.
What if he needs future medical for the rest of his life? Can he get it?
There is no evidence that this seaman needed future.
If he needed it, could he get it?
Under the contract, no, but there is no evidence as to what he could get from the Philippine system.
Under the contract, he cannot get future medical.
He cannot get he's not entitled to. I will say that when he needed a skin graft operation after he had reached maximum cure, the Rickmers did pay for that. So that was done. But I will point out there's no evidence that this man needs any medical treatment in the future. There's no evidence he's been denied.
They said they have a doctor that deposed him and said he's...
That is stuff that they obtained long after the arbitration, and it wasn't submitted to the arbitrator. So now all of a sudden we have a situation where he agrees to arbitration. He doesn't want to arbitrate, so he's not going to produce any evidence to the arbitrators. Then he's going to come back to the U.S. courts, and all of a sudden he's going to come up with all this additional evidence. That clearly flies in the face of the policy favoring arbitration. Let me just quickly summarize. This court has specifically enforced this contract. This is an important case. A lot of people have an interest in how you decide this case. It's got wide-ranging precedential value. So we urge you to look beyond this one seaman's quest for additional compensation and consider the ramifications of your decision in this case. And we believe the district court was wrong. We ask that the decision be reversed and that you run the judgment enforcing the arbitral award. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, to both sides. Good briefing and helpful argument. The case will be submitted along with the others that we heard this morning. With that, we'll stand in recess until 9 a.m. in the morning.